down and troubled, and you need some love and care, and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt that nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, the big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radioland. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Out sounds nasty every time I say it. We have an exciting show planned for you today. I am so excited. Six-time author, radio show host, caregiving expert, and founder of caregiving.com since 1996, Denise Brown. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial. Oh, yeah, and they're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason they tell you all this is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then you won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it could have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing. Guess what? We need another thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through the grief process. You can't go around it, you can't go over it, you can't go under it, you got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcast and my books and my videos and my blog. I know it sounds like it's all about me, but it's not. Actually, it's all about you. So just go to my website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com, or I have a shortcut, DaveNass.com. That's Dave and then N-A-S-S, Nancy, Apple, Sam, first four letters of my last name. And when you go to my website, you will want to take my short quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout? And guess what? Just for doing that, I'm going to send you a free link to my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. Story about my amazing wife and me, and we're still getting rave reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. She suffered a stroke 19 years ago, lost her speech, basically kind of nonverbal, and she's paralyzed on her right side, thus one arm, one leg, 100 words. So please don't miss out on this very informative quiz that will assess where you are in the burnout process, and the best part is you get my book absolutely free for just doing that. Amazon is still selling for almost $10, so it's a great value. Now, I want to take this moment to thank my guest last week, medical advocate Kathy Pendleton. Her advice on how to manage your hospital stay could very well save your loved one's life and possibly even your own. If I knew what she knows, 19 years ago, my wife would still be speaking today, and she would not be paralyzed. We would have caught that blockage in her carotid artery beforehand. So everything you need to know about the hospital. Now, to hear this very interesting and informative interview, just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com or DaveNass.com and click on the Inspiring Interviews tab, or you can go right to iTunes by clicking the Radio Show tab. And just a reminder, all these shows are recorded podcasts after they go live, so you will never miss any of them if you don't catch them live. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guest now, Denise Brown. Denise, are you there? Can you hear me?
I am. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for patiently sitting through all that introduction stuff for our first-time listeners. So, t- tell us about yourself. Who are you and what do you do?
So
about a loaded question.
So I started working with family caregivers, so individuals who provide care to a family member or friend, in 1990. And I was just fascinated by the experience. And at the time, my first job working with family caregivers was part of the respite care program in the state of New Jersey. So New Jersey has a program that's funded through casino revenue to help family caregivers. And I basically organized a respite for them. So whatever type of break fit for them, I organized for them. And I would make home visits and sit with them and listen to the stories that they told me. And it was fascinating to me. And I'm a writer, so the ability to listen to a story about a life-changing experience like caregiving that ultimately becomes a transformative experience really felt like a blessing to me, that others would share these stories with me. And I continued working with family caregivers in different settings. And then in 1995, I decided to start a business to help them. And the first product that I launched was actually a print newsletter called Caregiving. And it was like an at-home support group in a print form that went to your house. So you didn't have to worry about getting out of the house, but you could read something about others in a similar situation. Because we all know that when you're in a situation that is so tough and so demoralizing, you want to connect with someone else who understands. And that's really what I've done over the years. And that's really the format behind caregiving.com, which I launched in 1996, is I want to feel like you can connect with someone who understands, who speaks your new language that you had to learn.
Your new normal. So you did this back in the olden days when I don't even know what was available back then. And you were doing all that while you were a caregiver?
And I have not had the personal experience of caregiving. I just am starting to help my parents. And I helped my parents and uncle care for my grandmother. But this is the first time that I'm really stepping into the shoes of a primary family caregiver with my parents.
Cool. Now, I need to tell the audience that you are typically on the other side of the mic because you have your own radio show, which I've heard and is very impressive. You have the fantastic radio voice, and you even know what you're doing more than I do, apparently, because you've been doing it a lot longer. So tell us, what inspired you to start caregiving.com way back in 1996? I know you just touched on it a little bit there.
So I was at dinner with some friends, and it was probably October 1995, and a friend started talking to me about this thing called the internet and how a buddy of his had gone to some message boards and was selling products, and he was making money on the internet. Well, I need to go where people are making money. So I thought, well, I'm going to find out about this internet thing. And I had a computer that had Prodigy, if you remember Prodigy, pre-bundled with software. So I went on Prodigy. That was how I connected to the internet. And I took a class on how to build your own website. So I did that. I did that over Christmas 1995. I thought, I'll just see what this is like. I'll put up a very basic website and see what happens. I won't invest anything other than my time. And so I launched it, and I really just pulled content from my newsletters to create the website. And lo and behold, people started coming to the website. And then in August of 1996, I thought, well, I should get a domain name, and I should really launch something, not just a page through Prodigy. And August 3rd, I remember it just like it was yesterday. I was
That's my wedding anniversary, August 3rd.
Very interesting. I thought, well, I'll see if caregiving.com is still available. And I crossed my fingers. I thought, oh, my gosh, will I be lucky enough that it's still available? If you remember how the domain rush was way back when, I was rushing to get a domain. And it was. And so I actually hired a web designer to launch the first site. And that's really how it started.
Wow. Yeah, I wanted caregiving.com, but it was already taken. But
yeah.
I was late to the party. Wow. So I can't believe you've been doing this so long. I've had a lot of guests on, but I think you're the only one who's been doing it longer than a lot of people as far as having a website and everything like that. Kudos to you. Now, you've been working with caregivers since 1990, you said. What
Yes.
changes have you seen during the last 25 years? I don't have an opportunity to ask too many people that question, but you've got some perspective, don't you?
Yeah, and I'll share mine, and I'd love for you to share yours.
Sure.
So when I think about caregiving in 1990, when I connected with family caregivers, it was, for lack of a better way to describe it, a gentler experience. And I mean that because of the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is so chaotic. You have so many choices. It is so frenetic. And 25 years ago, it was just a gentler experience. That's the best way I can describe it. I'm curious, how do you feel based on, gosh, you know, you're coming 20 years caring for your wife.
Yeah.
How would you describe it? What's different for you now than what it was 20 years ago?
Well, obviously, I was thrust into the caregiving duties. I was living my life, and all of a sudden, my wife had a headache, the headache of her life. And she's a very busy person, very type A. She was interior decorator. She was a wedding coordinator at our church. She was a gourmet cook. She was like a cross between Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. When she had this headache, I remember on the third day or the second day, she was saying, call Dr. Kevorkian. For those of you who don't remember who he was 20 years ago, he was the euthanasia guy who would help people commit suicide. And she says, this headache hurts so much, I want to just die. And, you know, we go to the doctor when we're dying. We don't go there every time we have an ache or a pain. So she decided, okay, it was a Memorial Day weekend, and she was going to go on Tuesday after the holiday. But then it started getting better. So she says, oh, cool. And then on the fourth morning, which was a Sunday morning when we were getting ready for church, it just started getting worse again. And then I was rubbing her head, and she just went limp on me there, or half her body went limp. And I remember I called the paramedics, and they said, yeah, she's having a stroke, and where do you want to take her? And we had a small hospital closest to us and a larger hospital a little further away. And they took her to the smaller hospital, which I call a rinky-dink hospital. CAT scan was not good. And so they didn't identify it quick enough to give her that clot-busting drug to clear the... So back in those days, I remember when they finally moved us to the bigger place, and we spoke to our neurologist, who says, you know, I like to get the spouse involved in decision making, because, you know, they're going to be the one who has to live with this decision that we make, good or bad. So this first doctor, he was just making decisions, you know, on my behalf, and I had no idea.
Right.
What he was doing or why he was doing it, or if I had any say in it, because it just wasn't an option. But the second neurologist, of course, it was too late by this time, he was telling me how he does things differently. So I remember there was a woman that came by who was a stroke survivor trying to get us to go to a stroke support group. And I didn't even know what a stroke support group was. I didn't even know what a support group was. Just busy living life. Her speech was very impaired. She was talking very slow and a little slurred. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, is this what my wife's going to talk like?
Yeah.
Well, of course, today I'd give anything to have her talk like that, because she can't talk at all. So, I mean, it was scary. But we did go. And it was great for me because there was also a stroke support group. Now, I was on the Internet, but I had no idea that anything was even available. That's basically what I can say, is I wish I knew your site was available. But this interview is about you, not me.
Well, you know, there's something interesting that you talked about, and that was your experience in the hospital. And you have to be so well-versed in how the healthcare system works in order to have a successful experience with the healthcare system. But you don't know until you've been through it. And I think today, not only are we battling for good care to find the right doctors, the right specialists, but when you're in the hospital, you're battling to get out of the hospital without additional infections.
Sure.
E. diff, MRSA.
Today especially, right?
Yes. The worst place to go when you're sick is the hospital, but that's the place you go. There are so many battles that you fight today that make it that much more stressful, and you
right.
feel that much more pressure to be on your toes to know what's going on. And yet, how can you know? Because you're just thrust into a situation where you can't possibly have enough knowledge. And I think
right.
the pressure of that can be absolutely overwhelming.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the interview I did just last week with Kathy Pendleton on how to manage your hospital stay and just practical tips, practical advice. And like I said, if I'd have known the things that she taught on my show last week, my wife would still be okay today. So I would encourage everybody to go listen to that show. It's on our recorded podcasts. But you're so right, Denise. Thank you for mentioning that. So let me ask you another question. There are so many resources on the internet for caregivers. How would you describe the different type of sites out there? I mean, they're like everywhere. And thank God
yeah.
they're everywhere, because there didn't used to be anything.
Right. So you have lots of choices, which is fantastic. I would say there are support groups that are disease specific. So you can look for support with other family caregivers based on, and the term that we use is caree, based on your caree's diagnosis. You can find a site that is just for those who are caring for parents. You can find a site where it's just caring for spouses. You can find other sites where it's not disease specific and it's not relational. It's anyone who's caring for a family member. And I think what's great about the choice is that you can explore to see what feels right for you. And I think that each group, interestingly enough, will have a different personality. And you're really looking for the personality that fits with you. And if you don't feel comfortable or don't like a support group, you should look for another. You shouldn't feel like, well, I joined, you know, maybe I should stay. It's okay to move on and find something that works for you. The right support is critical for you. So don't settle for support that doesn't feel right.
You know, we went to a stroke support group. As I mentioned, I went to the caregiver group, and she went to the stroke group, which were next door to each other. And I loved my group. That was the first time that I actually heard the concept that you have to take care of yourself. I said, whoa, what an interesting concept. You know, put yourself first. Let me try that. Because, like I said, it was a rough 2 years. She was in the angry part of the grief process. And as we all know, you know, the only one that you can take anger out on is those closest to you. So I got the brunt of it. You know, it seemed like it was my fault that I had to take away her car and she couldn't drive anymore. It was my fault that we had to move out of a two-story house into a one-story house into this, you know, smaller house, downsize, and she just loved her house. I mean, you know, it was her baby. She was going to be buried in the backyard when that time came. But she did not like her support group. She had her stroke at a relatively young age, 52, and she just did not want to be around disabled people, and she wanted to be around normal people. So I basically kind of forced her to go, and seemed like it was therapeutic for her when she was there. But, you know, every week we'd go through the same conversation. Come on, don't you want to go? No. So what do you think of that, where somebody actually wants to be around normal people and not disabled people with their disability? Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, it happens all the time.
Happens all the time.
You know, we label, right, situations,
mm-hmm.
people, experiences. And sometimes an experience happens and that puts a label on us. It's not our mm-hmm. choice. And
right.
we certainly are going to revolt, right? We don't want that label. It's interesting because I have one of my bloggers on caregiving.com had the exact opposite experience, where her husband loved his support group. It was the same situation where the family caregivers and the caree split up. same time, but different groups. Her husband loved his support group, and the blogger really struggled with her. She really didn't like her group. It wasn't the same age as she is. Mm-hmm. So her husband was diagnosed with early onset when he was in his mid-50s. So the support group was for early onset. Many of the members were in their 80s. And so for my blogger, who was still in her 50s, it was hard for her to relate to them, because she would think, but you had 30 years that I'll never have. So she went because her husband got so much out of his group, but she really struggled. She really struggled. And ultimately, after they had been with the group for a couple of years, she was able to say, okay, this isn't right for me. And she found another group that's close to home she can walk to. And the other part that she liked about the new group is no one knows who she is. So she's very comfortable saying
anonymous.
What's going on. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm sure some of the comments I get, just yesterday I was reading something. Someone was commenting on a post I made on our website, and she says, Dave, thank God for you. I wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for you. I mean, these kinds of things. I said, wow, people are really out there, and they really need this, and this is their support group, and maybe they're not even a member of another one, but the caregiving community online is so, so valuable out there. That I just thank God for the technology that we can put it to use. So listen, we're going to take a quick break. Don't go away, and we will be right back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's N-A-S-S. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we are back with Denise Brown, author, radio show host, having trouble talking today, and all-around caregiving expert. Denise, before I get back to my questions, I wanted to ask you about your blogs. It's not just your blog on your website, it's a bunch of people's blogs. I mean, how does that work?
Right. So when you join caregiving.com, and it's free to join, and you can start a blog about your caregiving days. Caregiving.com has probably one of the largest collection of caregiver stories out there. Mm. So we started blogging in 2008. Was what I really wanted to start having Family Caregivers blog in 2005, but I had to work through some technology in order for it to happen. So anyone can start blogging. And I hear over and over and over that those who blog say it is one of the best coping mechanisms that they have. When you start blogging, you release what weighs heavy. And the thing about blogging on caregiving.com is it's like a journal, but you're journaling in front of an audience that claps for you when you're done, that says, good for you, add away, keep going, you can do it. So there's that added element of support when you blog that can be just energizing, revitalizing. It gives you the strength to keep going.
So many people are addicted to Facebook. That can be a good thing, that can be a bad thing. But the caregiving community, I mean, I've spoken to Adrienne Gruberg of the caregiver space, and she says a lot more people are on her Facebook page. I mean, she's got like 90,000 people kind of blogging on her Facebook page. That's their place of choice, and she keeps trying to move them over to her website because it's, you know, it's more secure, et cetera. Do you find that more people are active on your Facebook page or on your blogging website?
Much more active on the website.
Okay, well, that's good.
So there's it's interesting what Facebook has done. So Facebook has made it easy to talk about your caregiving day, but there's the other side of it where you could be talking about it to people who don't know what to do then with what you're saying. So you could be blogging to friends or family members that are just completely overwhelmed by what you're going through. So when you blog to someone else who understands, it's not overwhelming for them. We have some members on caregiving.com that haven't shared a diagnosis of their caree with the entire circle. Right. Mm-hmm. So they've told immediate family members, but they haven't told aunts, uncles, cousins, and they're connected with them on Facebook. So a lot of times people want to just talk about what's going on caregiving.com and feel, okay, I could talk about it here. It's hard to talk about it on Facebook. But here, I'm just going to let it all out. There's that freedom of being able to talk about it.
So I'm a little confused because I know what blogging is because we have a blog on our website, and it's hard to get people to respond to our blog, but yet you've got people actually blogging on their own. Does each person have their own little blog, or is it just one big blog that everyone's blogging on, or how does it work?
It's almost splitting a little bit of hairs, but you have your own blog.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the caregiving.com blog.
Right.
And the blogs are categorized, so caring for spouses, caring for parents, caring for spouses while you're raising kids, caring for parents while you're raising kids, caring for children, caring for aunts and uncles, caring for siblings. So it's categorized by the relationship because oftentimes when you're caring for a spouse, for instance, you want to connect with others who are in that similar situation.
Wow.
So we have all those categories of members who have decided, I'm going to start blogging, and who now blog when it's convenient for them. So it could be the middle of the night they'll start blogging. Some blog a couple times a week. Some blog when they're moved to blog. It's great because it's really available when it's right for you.
Let's talk about the most common complaints and issues that we know caregivers are going through. For example, are resentment and guilt biggies that you hear about on your blogs?
Yep. Yep.
Well, what,
and I just did,
what kind
I just
of resentments did, do they go through, and when do they usually feel guilty?
So resentment is such an interesting emotion because it's so ugly, it's so insidious, and yet you don't really know that's what it is. So on Saturdays, I do a podcast called Table Talk, and a family caregiver joins me, and we talk about caregiving. And on Saturday, one of the members of caregiving.com who also blogs joined me to talk about the change in her marriage because of caring for her parents. So her mom was diagnosed with cancer. Linda, who cared for her, moved from her home with her husband back to her parents' home. It was a long-distance situation, 8-hour drive. It was just too hard for her to be in two places at one time.
Sure.
And her mom's care needs were critical, so she basically moved in with her parents, and she really resented her husband. It was a very interesting show because she talked about how she resented that he wasn't more present in her day and more supportive of what she was going through. But we also talked about his perspective, which was he was just trying to stay out of the way.
I wonder if he had his own resentments, too.
Sure, of course. And it's so hard to verbalize them, right? And you can talk yourself into believing that your resentments are the fact. So she would hear him talk about going out for coffee every morning, knowing that he was spending a couple bucks. And when she would say, why don't you come visit? He would say, I don't have money for gas. It was also a difficult time for them financially. He had lost his job. And she would think, you know what, if you did not go out for coffee every day, if you saved that $2, you'd have money for gas to come visit me. So then when you start counting in that kind of way, you've counted yourself into a corner where her husband could do no right, and yet her interpretation of the situation meant that she wasn't getting what she wanted. So we talked about how she could reframe the situation as she's entering into her caregiving situation with her dad and how it will be different, because they both recognize that it can't be like it was. It's got to be different.
Wow. And guilt?
So you can feel guilty for just about everything, right? You can feel guilty. You can feel guilty for your good health. You can feel guilty that you can walk out the door and go get a cup of coffee when your caree can't. You can feel guilty about the resentment that you feel or the angry moments that you have. You can feel guilty because you feel like you can't do enough. And no matter how much you do, it's just not going to cure the situation, that you can't find the cure. You could just feel guilty for everything. It's awful. It's awful.
Well, in my book, I've got a remedy for guilt. I'll just tell it real quick. I liken guilt to a disposable diaper. You know, like the poop is the guilt and the diaper is the conscience, you know, that we harbor the guilt in. And I put guilt in two categories. There's deserved guilt and undeserved guilt. Guilt is a good thing only for a few minutes, because guilt is supposed to make us stop and examine ourselves and say, wait, I'm feeling guilty. Is there something that I am doing wrong that deserves this guilt? And so you want to look at yourself, and sometimes you may need to ask a third party, hey, you know, I'm struggling with guilt. Should I be feeling guilty, you know, to get an outside perspective on it? And the answer is, if the answer is yes, and you discover that, yes, you did do something, then fix whatever it is. You know, turn yourself into the police, or say you're sorry, or, you know, go buy another one that you broke, or, you know, whatever it is, fix it, and then take that guilt that just fell into this disposable diaper, your conscience, wrap it up and get rid of it. There are people who just live in guilt for weeks, months, years, forever. You know, and we all know what would happen if a disposable diaper was never, ever changed. It would just cook that baby's bottom, and it would hurt a lot. And the same thing would happen with guilt if you don't get rid of it. Now, on the opposite side of the coin, if the answer to that question is no, I've done nothing to deserve this guilt, they're laying all this guilt on me unnecessarily, and to make sure, ask some other people that you trust, you know, and if they agree with you, yes, you have no reason. You know, I think of Fred Sanford in Sanford and Son, that old show, where he would constantly be throwing this guilt on his son Lamont by grabbing his heart and saying, Elizabeth, I'm coming for you, honey. You know, and he could get Lamont to do anything he wanted just by making him, you know, do that. So the same thing. If you say, you know what, I don't deserve this guilt, you take that guilt, you wrap it up, you throw it away. Same thing. And you don't let it affect you like water on a duck. So what do you think of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about guilt is that it keeps you from being your best, because it just saps your energy.
Oh, yeah.
We can't feel guilty for being human. We were made to be imperfect. It is our day. It is who we are. It is our life. And I think becoming comfortable with the imperfections is one of our biggest tests. Because if we beat ourselves up for being imperfect, it's really a waste of our time. We are doing our best every day, every day. And it's important for us to be proud of that, be proud of our ability to do our best. and to give ourselves a fresh start every morning, not to carry the baggage of yesterday into today, and not to bring too many of the worries about tomorrow into today, but to really be in the moment. And that's one of the blessings of caregiving, is that it teaches you that. You know, it's a terrible way to learn, but you do really learn to be in that moment, to focus on the here and now.
Now, I was listening to one of your shows, and you were talking about something that I haven't really talked about much because I never thought about it, but yet it's so relevant. Promises that we make, and broken promises to care receivers. What do you do if you find that you've made a promise that you can't keep without it destroying your health? You know, how do you get out of a promise that you made to your care receiver? For example, I'll never put you in a nursing home. I mean, don't ever make a promise like that. I know it sounds great and it might put the person at ease, and they may be deathly afraid of entering into a nursing home, but you know what? One day there will be a time that they may have to go into a nursing home. And if that ever happens, you know, make sure it's the best nursing home that you can find. My mother is suffering with beginning dementia, and we finally had to put her into a nursing home, but we searched and searched and searched, and she is in a marvelous, marvelous place. We met a famous artist there, and she had a stroke, and she lost her memory for a year, and she's much better now, but she still wants to stay there because she's afraid she's going to have another stroke. And she's painting these beautiful pictures. Her pictures are in galleries all over the world. I says, how is it that you're in this place? She says, well, my daughters looked all over the country, and this is the best place they could find. And there's my mother in this place, and it just happens to be in Glendale, California. So explain about how do you get out of a promise that you made that you can't keep?
So I think it's important to recognize what a promise is. And that is, in essence, a thought that controls the future. Mm-hmm. So we can't know what care needs are going to be like in 2 weeks or 2 years. We can't know what our personal situation will be like in 2 weeks or 2 years. So when we make a promise, we're saying we're committing to something to do in the future, without really knowing what that future is going to be like. That's why it's so hard when we make a promise that paints us in the corner. So if you think about a promise in a different way, which is I promise to provide the best care possible, but that doesn't mean that you are the one that's always providing the care. It means that you might be overseeing the care. Mm-hmm. It's important to really reframe a promise that you make to yourself, to your caree, to your family, so that it is realistic and appropriate.
Yeah.
Because you could make a promise to your spouse if you're in a situation where you're caring for a parent. You could promise your spouse, okay, we're only going to keep mom at home until she's incontinent, because I know I'm not going to be able to manage that.
Uh-huh.
And then incontinence comes and you think, oh, this isn't as bad as I thought. I want to keep her here. Well, you've made a promise and maybe you've changed your mind.
Yeah.
You have to give yourself that wiggle room. You simply cannot predict the future. It would be so great if we could, right? But we can't. So you want to make sure that you're committing to something that gives you that wiggle room, that regardless of what happens, you feel good about what it is that you're doing.
That is so good. You know, the stories I hear on my website are just heartbreaking. Sometimes I really don't know what to say, because they're just it seems like now in retrospect I'm saying, why are they doing this? Why are they killing themselves? And they're not resting, they're not eating properly. Now they're getting sicker than the person they're caring for. And many times it could be a promise that they're just trying to not break that is killing them. And it's so important what you said. Those who are listening, be careful what you promise. And if you did make a bad promise, you should go back and say something like, you know, I made a promise. I want to reword that promise, just for the record. Mm-hmm. I mean, you recommend that? Fix it?
Yeah. absolutely. You can always revisit your words, your actions, your commitments. I think we often think we can't. Well, I said it, so chiseled in cement. It's not. it's great to communicate about it. And the thing that's so important when you communicate is just to be honest about it. When I said this to you, I meant it. However, our situation has changed. I want to commit to you that we're going to do the best we can. So let's talk about how we do that. How do we ensure that you have what's best?
Good point. Now, I'm sure you've come across burnout in your many discussions with your caregivers and the carees and your blogs. How does stress relate to burnout, and what's your opinion on how to avoid burnout?
You know, burnout is such an interesting topic because it can be hard to prevent because we live in such a busy time. We sometimes cause burnout by trying to do too much, trying to make up for. So, for instance, in a situation where, let's say I'm married, I'm caring for a parent, we still have children, I'm working a job, I might feel tremendously guilty because I feel like I'm taking away from my kids because of caregiving. So I try to be everything to everyone. And that's impossible. That's impossible. I think forgiving ourselves, letting ourselves off the hook, and allowing ourselves downtime can really be powerful. And we minimize it, right? We think, downtime, how is that going to help? But if you just sit with the moments in your day, it can be easier. And if you practice mindfulness, being really focused on what's the task that I'm focused on right now, rather than worrying about all the ones that you're not doing. One of our members on caregiving.com has cared for his parents. He served in the military, and he lost his wife. So he is someone that has this view of the world that has been so helpful to us. And he talks about when he was in the Marines, they learned this technique, which is to manage the alligators that are biting at your boat. You know, don't worry about the ones that are coming. Worry about the ones that are there.
Prioritize.
And we also have a tendency to try to manage the future. So I'm also a life coach. I had a client who would try to manage the future when she had a bad day with her mom. She would think, oh, my gosh, I can't do this anymore. What if my mom is like this all the time? I can't do it. Oh, my gosh, that means I have to put my mom in a nursing home. What is everybody going to think of me? Am I going to find a nursing home that's appropriate? What is my mom going to think of me? So she was living in the future. If she pulled herself back to that moment and thought, okay, we're having a tough time right now. What can I do to make it easier for us? So rather than focusing on the worries, if you bring it back to, well, what's the solution that will make it easier for us right now, it can really make a difference. And just being honest about what you're struggling with can be helpful too. We have a tendency to sit with the struggle, which is what you were talking about with the dirty diaper. We sit in the struggle rather than being honest about, I'm really struggling with this. What could help me?
Yeah.
The ability to be curious can really help with burnout too. I'm feeling depressed. I'm feeling overwhelmed. What can help me feel better? What can I be aware of that I can do that makes a difference for me?
Good. You know, you brought up nursing homes and stuff. A lot of people are concerned because they can't afford a nursing home, or what, you know, they feel trapped. But, you know, we've had guests on our show who deal with hooking people up with government agencies to, there's a lot of help out there that people are unaware of. Social Security, there's a program that they will actually pay you for being a caregiver. My mother's in this program that actually pays for an assisted living facility, and it's a brand new program, 5 years old, brand new, and they just renewed it. So there are many, many things that you can look into if you contact somebody who is aware of all of those elderly programs. We are going to take a short break, and we'll get back in a couple of minutes, so don't go away.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m., Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. and Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassani.
And we are back with Denise Brown, radio show host, 6-time author, and we're going to talk about your books in a moment, and all-time caregiving expert. Let's talk about self-care real quick. We've got about 12 minutes left of the show. What exactly does it mean, self-care, and how do you do it, and what can we expect afterwards? Are you there? Did I unmute?
Yeah, sorry. I put myself on mute. Sorry about that. So self-care is really where you put yourself in a place where you feel good. You feel confident. You feel rested. You feel able. Now, those are tough places to find in a caregiving situation because you're fighting for sleep. You're fighting for confidence because everything is new and you can feel like you're failing. And you can feel like you're just not up to the task. I think you have to take regular time to involve yourself in the relationships, the activities, the moments where you feel like I can. So one of the things that we do on caregiving.com is we really encourage creativity. We have a caregiving art show every summer. Actually, it's every September. And last summer, we did a summer-long event to get ready for the art show where I shared a prompt, and then the members would draw or paint or write based on the prompt. Caregiving is such a – it really – puts you face to face with all your fears. And I think that is a time when you are most creative. You are looking for an outlet to talk about what it's like to be up against your fears. That's why blogging is so powerful. So if you can look for other ways to be creative, paint or draw or
music.
Color, music, right. Actually, 2 of our members have shared music that they've created.
Wow.
That they've composed. It's really wonderful. So look for the creativity in you. And don't say, oh, I've never been creative. I really think that when you're in a tough time, that's when your creative juices really start to stir. And when you can be creative, you can feel confident. You can feel able. And you can feel rested. Something that we're going to start on the site is a contest about doodling, but it's a very specific doodle. And of course, I can't remember what it's called, but it's called something like Zen. I can't remember what it is, but you follow, you just create lines, which in essence create art. And you really get lost in it. You really get lost in it. So look for ways to be creative in your garden, with your painting, with your drawing. We just released a book of poems from Family Caregivers. And I never considered myself to be a poet, but I wrote 3 poems that felt great when I was writing them. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah, so be open to an expression.
You're a poet, You're a poet
didn't
and you
even
don't
know
it.
And I also would say photography can really help you stay in the moment. Something else that we do on the website is we take a photo on the first day of every month. It's really a way for us to remember. We're documenting our experience. But it's so easy with our smartphones to take photos.
Sure.
And when you line up your photo, you're totally in that moment. And then you look at your photo and you think, oh, wow, look what I captured. Look what I captured. One of our members submitted a photo she took for our art show last year. She wasn't even thinking about what she was doing because she was so, oh, my gosh, I've got to capture this. And it was her brother, who she cares for, watching her husband have a back spasm. So it's a triangle. So she's concerned about her husband, but she notices how her brother, who has suffered from epilepsy his entire life, the expression on his face was of such compassion, she couldn't help but take a photo. And it's those moments that we capture in time on in our photography that are, oh, wow. And it reminds you of what you're doing and why you're doing it. It brings back the purpose to you. So I would say creativity can really help with burnout. And I'll just mention one other thing. There was a study that was done about knitting. It's the same thing. Knitting pulls you into the moment. You can't think about anything except the next stitch. It can be a very refreshing activity that helps stave off burnout.
Wow. You're an author. I would love for you to tell us what you write about. And I've also noticed that people and entities outside of caregiving seem to have taken interest in you. Tell us about that, all the magazines, newspapers, and National Public Radio. I mean, you're really involved. You're a very creative person yourself.
Right. So the first book I wrote was based on staging the caregiving experience. So way back in 1997, I was getting emails from family caregivers who would visit the website, and they would ask basically the same questions. Why me? Why now? What now? So I thought about how the Alzheimer's is staged. And I thought, well, what if we took that principle of staging and applied it to the caregiving experience? So I staged it. And that's the first book I wrote, which is called The Caregiving Years, Six Stages to a Meaningful Journey. I have also three books which are called Take Comfort, and there's a little variation on the book title for each volume. And the comforts are very short. You could call it prose. It's a reflection on something that happens during a day that a family caregiver will relate to. That's not anything you want. And I turn it around, and I take the reflection, and I sprinkle it with hope. So basically it is, this is what you're going through, and this is why you're going to be okay. And I take one word and write prose about it. So there's three volumes right now, and each volume is about 100 words. One of the volumes is, I think, 108. And it's very easy reading. You could read it in 5 minutes if you wanted to take out a comfort. And that's what's so helpful for a family caregiver. It's those snippets of, okay, breath. That's really what the comforts are. It gives you back your breath.
You really are a poet.
Yeah, you know what's really interesting? This is an aside, but years ago when I was putting together my first book, one of my nephews looked through it, and he was probably eight at the time, and he was looking through it, and he said to me later, Antonise, tell me about those books of poems, the book of poems. I thought, wow, what a great way to look at that, because it is a little bit like a poem.
Interesting. Have you always written, or is this something that just happened since the caregiving experience?
So I'm a writer, and I was an English major at school. When I graduated from college, I worked as a writer for trade magazines, and did that for a few years and wanted to switch gears, which is what landed me into working with family caregivers. And what was so interesting about that is that's where I found the stories that I had been searching for. I wanted to write about something that was meaningful. And when I started working with family caregivers, I found meaning.
Wow. Well, Denise, time has gone so quickly. I just want to thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show. in the last few minutes or so, is there anything else that you can share that my caregiving audience can implement immediately to begin feeling refreshed and rejuvenated right now?
Yeah. First of all, thank you so much for having me. It was delightful, and
oh,
I so appreciate
pleasure.
That you asked me. And I would say that caregiving is the experience where you feel like you're the only one and that no one will understand. And I think it's so important to know that you are in good company, that there's many who understand. Mm-hmm. And not only are there many who understand, but there are many who want to support you, that want you to do well. So seek out the support that fits for you, knowing that that support will lift you up on those difficult days. And I also tell you that what you're going through right now is not lost. You can worry so much about what you're losing in a caregiving situation. Mm. And I hope you know that it's not lost, that all that you learn, all the wisdom that you gain will be so helpful for another. And someday you're going to meet someone and be able to impart that wisdom and insight that will change their day. It will happen for you because it happens for all of us.
So true. Now, how can anyone get a hold of you if they want to get on your blog or read mm-hmm. your books or listen to your show
yeah.
or whatever?
So everything's on caregiving.com. So you can reach me through caregiving.com. You can send me an email. My email address is Denise@caregiving.com. Sorry. You can connect with me on Twitter. We have Twitter chats too. So if anybody's interested in that, we do a chat on Twitter every other Sunday evening, and you can connect with me there. My Twitter handle is caregiving. And I'm always happy to connect with a family caregiver. So if you have any questions, any concerns, please feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to help.
You are so busy. Where do you find the time to do all of this? It takes a lot of time to run a blog and a website and a radio show. I mean, how do you do it?
You know, that's a really good question because sometimes I don't feel like I do it very well, but I'm very passionate about this. And, you know, passion just fuels,
tell.
Right?
Yeah,
it keeps you going.
Well, Denise, thank you again for allowing me to interview you. And thank you to my listening audience for tuning in today and every Wednesday, live at noon Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget that all of our shows are recorded podcasts, so you can listen on the same link any time of the day or night, 24/7. So they're also on our website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com, and the shortcut, DaveNass.com, N-A-S-S, as well as iTunes. And those links are also on our website under the show. By the way, when you're on our site, don't forget to quiz, are you a candidate for burnout, so that you can assess where you are in the burnout process and get your free copy of my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. You will be encouraged and uplifted by doing both. So until next week, may God richly bless you, and goodbye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.